Good afternoon, everyone. To start, I'd like to thank Professor Cole Durham for inviting me and giving me the opportunity to speak to you. I will not talk about French circularity, but today's conference requires it, calls for it, but mainly about one aspect, one topic regarding religion in France, the challenge for the secular state. The relationship between the school system and religion in France has been a very sensitive topic in the history of the country. The Republican state and the Catholic Church were fiercely opposed by the priests and teachers arguing over their influence on children's education. Most importantly, with the laws that secularized the education system between 1882 and 1886, the separation of church and the school system in France preceded that of church and state, according to the law of 1905. Since then, the state school system has not been concerned with religious education, with responsibility that fell on the family and religious institutions. For that reason, the one day of school during the week was allowed. Usually it was Wednesday and then Thursday, then it moved to Wednesday. We're allowing primary state schools to stating that primary state schools have one day off once a week in addition to Sunday, in order to give parents the opportunity to make arrangements, if they so wish, for the religious education of their children outside the school. I can go. In schools, moral and religious education was reprised by moral and civic education, as much out of fear of conflict and also out of respect for the freedom of conscience. There was an issue in respect religion in the classroom. And in spite of the struggles against the congregational schools and private schools and education and mainly Catholics, the conflict between state and private school, typically called the school war, that came up at the end of the 20th century with massive demonstrations between private schools in 1984 and in favor of state schools in 1994. Whenever there were plans to modify the status quo in one way or another. Today, three major developments have left their mark in the relationship between religion and the school system in France. First, the integration of private schools, mostly Catholic, in the public service of national education through contracts of association in accordance with the law of 1959 called the Debré Law. These agreements guaranteed the recognition of the specific character and ensured that the state financing of these schools but in return, private schools had to accept all students and follow the state curriculum. Secondly, the decision to develop the teaching of religious facts or religious phenomena, religious issues, what they call it, faits religieux, in the secular school system, according to the report Debré in 2002, in order to contribute to the students' knowledge of civilization in present and past evolutions. Third, the concern to protect the principle of school secularity, laïcité scolaire, by restricting the students' expression of religious identity. The law of the 15th of March 2004, banning the wearing of symbols, including the cross, yarmulke, or veil, that ostensibly manifest a religious affiliation in school. Discrete symbols are permitted. Thus, in principle, French secularity doesn't really adopt a full privatization of realization, but rather a measure of social pacification, which allows the regulation of religious diversity in society. While at the same time, it guarantees the religious secularity of the state. In reality, it's not always that simple, as the French way of managing religion is often marked by a deep distrust of the power, the state power toward religion, and that may infringe over into individual freedom and emancipation of the spirit. In the last decade, the emphasis was placed on the necessity to reinforce the common education for all students. And to reinforce this common education in two directions, two ways, in common moral teaching and teaching about religion. In a document entitled The Common Foundation The Common Foundation in that document here that represented the similar bounding of the nation is comprised of a set of essential knowledge and skills. There are seven skills, but among the seven skills, we can see is it comprised knowledge, normalistic cultures. There's a humanities culture, the forming of judgment, taste, as it's a target of reflection as one, opinions and feelings. In this perspective, it seems essential to have a reference point, which I quote, to share European culture. According to this official document, I quote, the knowledge of key texts from antiquity, the Iliad and the Odyssey, the kind of foundation of Rome, and the Bible. In introduction, I quote, the diversity of civilization, societies and religions, and religion in France, in Europe, and in the world by relying on seminal texts, in particular, excerpts from the Bible and the Quran. In a general spirit of secularity, that is respectful of conscience and belief. Through this text, we can say that teaching religious facts is a key part of the educational objective of school education. More recently, in 2012, a minister of national education, Vincent Pellion, wanted to strengthen the teaching in school of a common moral education that will contribute to the development of respect, peaceful coexistence, and freedom. End of quote. To this end, he commissioned a report on teaching secular ethics, which was prepared in 2013. This report initiated a debate on the general outline of these common ethics in the context of a social situation that is characterized not only by a plurality of religious and philosophical sensibilities, but also by a plurality of conceptions of a good life, namely a true normative pluralism. But the emphasis was especially placed on teaching about religion in public schools. Since the end of the 1980s, various voices have risen concerning the creation of religion in school. Did the secular nature of school, by giving back to families the family of choice about religion, or ensure the independence of the school institution and its teachers in regards to any religious authority? In many respects, yes. But the question of religion in school emerged in very different circumstances compared to the period when the principle of secularity became institutionalized. It didn't emerge against secularity, but within secularity itself. And besides it, it constituted a tangible expression of the success of the principle of secularity itself. It was not a question of introducing catechism in school, but of drawing in a secular perspective all the consequences of the fact that, I quote, "a knowledge of religious cultures is necessary for the understanding of our societies, their past and their present state, their literary and artistic heritage, and their legal and political system." And the debate, hence the debate now in the French society, how and why, in view of what and for whom, can school, if we consider that it must undertake that task, take into account religious cultures? This was a topic of debate where various expectations concerning school and religion were combined. Although this debate did not lead to the creation of classes on the history of religion provided by a specific group of teachers, the fact remains that in France, a new insistence on religion has emerged in the history and humanities, in the curriculum of history and humanities since 1996. Looking into Régis Debray's report, who was an atheist philosopher, according to his report, in charge of a working group dealing with education and religion in the secular school system, in December 2001. The Minister of National Education, Jack Lang, at that time, acknowledged that, and I quote, "if a school that is truly and serenely secular was to give each student the opportunity to gain an understanding of the world, this means that teachers should take into account religions as influential elements, and to a large extent as structuring the history of mankind, sometimes as peace and factors of peace and modernity, and sometimes as factors of discord, deadly conflicts and regressions." It was after September 11, 2001, that the Minister Jack Lang felt the urgent need to undertake the initiative to reinforce the broaching of religion in school. Hence, there was an urgent need to make a transition, as Régis Debray very clearly stated, from a secularity of incompetence, laïcité d'incompétence, according to the secularity of the religion by nature doesn't concern us, but the necessity to move from a secularity of incompetence to a secularity of understanding, une laïcité d'intelligence. And according to the secularity of understanding, it's our duty to understand religion, to know and know and understand religion. To do this, the Debray report suggests a number of measures, including training in seminary schools for teachers. And that perspective, three great teams involved in teaching religions were identified. We can characterize the system as follows. First, the education is a language of symbolism. When the opportunity to name specific symbols to help society understand one way of explaining the world is in specific language, through specific language. Secondly, the contribution to the knowledge and understanding of our cultural heritage. Teaching about religion gives young people the opportunity to gain knowledge of the endless number of masterpieces in our human heritage, and a contribution to citizenship education, finally teaching about religion makes students capable of understanding different religions and the role of religion in the contemporary world. But in France, as a historical heritage, there has been a tendency to reduce the religion to private and personal opinion, according to Article 10 of 1789, no one shall be disquieted on account of his opinions, including his religious views, provided their manifestation doesn't disturb the state or the state order established by law. End of quote. That tendency to reduce religion to a private and personal opinion, thus forgetting that religion is a question, on the one hand, of deep convictions that strongly motivate people who believe in them, and, on the other hand, of collectively organized convictions that are expressed in a whole range of visible manifestations, monuments, gatherings, gestures, and so on. Religious phenomena exist because there are men and women who experience religions individuals. There are religious organizations and institutions. There are religious works and written, pictorial, and architectural traces. In short, texts and rituals, representations and attitudes, writings and codes of behavior. If state school does not know if God exists, it does and should know that there are individuals and groups who believe that God exists, and that this fact has all kinds of impact on personal and social life. The option selected on the Debray report was, thus, to use texts and writings that illustrate religion as a point of departure from which to trace their meaning. Thus, as in other European countries, France faces a new social and religious reality characterized by increasing number of people who state that they have no religion, and especially an increasing number of people who state that they do have no religion, and students that have no religious knowledge and no familiarity with the subject of religion. Additionally, there are a large number of Muslim minorities, a very pronounced religious pluralization in Europe societies, and different types of groups and networks with different religiosities. Concerns about the sectarian drift among such groups and current international affairs and that illustrate the intersections between religion and politics in various conflicts, anti-Semitism and Islamophobia, and the question of limiting religious expression in school. This is an opportunity to reflect on the question of how school deals with, treats, and teaches religious facts. Faced by these challenges, it is necessary not only to understand each other and to coexist peacefully while respecting each other's differences. This choice made in France to integrate religious issues, teaching religious facts into the objectives of school, and specifically in the education mission, and to namely to respect the prevalent ethical and pedagogical principles in different educational fields, to respect the increasing religious and philosophical plurality found in class. This reinforces the preference that must be granted to a social and historical objectification of religions that gives the opportunity to take a certain distance and respect the student's freedom of conscience. Teacher training, this is the key challenge, since teacher training is currently inadequate and a great deal of effort has to be made for teachers to be able to teach religious facts with calm assurance in terms of not only required knowledge but also of approaches and principles. Learning a social historical approach with its critical dimensions of studies of sources, interpretations, transmissions, and evolutions. Such learning, when applied to religious facts, is in itself, according to me, an important contribution to citizenship. Why? Because it places religious facts, phenomena, in the space of collective deliberation, considers them outside their individual and collective religious appropriations, in other words, and even if it involves one's own religion. It means learning to speak as if it were someone else's religion. The simple fact of having to talk about religion in front of a diverse audience, of not being able to rely on the collusion between co-religionists, but of having to objectivize and make explicit the worlds of representations and attitudes that correspond to a religion in a position that includes religious facts in the citizenship of pluralist democracies. It recognizes from the outset that the religious world under discussion is not an all-encompassing symbolic structure for all of society, that it is even if in the majority only one orientation among others. This does not prevent us, when teaching religious facts, from reserving a specific place for the most representative religions in the country, in the sense that these religions have left their mark on the history, the culture, and the traditions of the country in which this type of education is received. Thus, teaching religious facts can also contribute to citizenship, in that it is a part of a national education. It is about a state school. Education is a state school in a given place and with a given historical and cultural identity. Thank you very much.
voices into this discussion to explore how, why, and under what conditions does the relationship between religion and national identity become problematic. In Slavica's words this morning, best to look at these things from the ground up, and so that's the idea behind his research, see what's happening on the ground. After sharing these voices with you, I will consider the notion of what, if anything, can be done about the problems that arise from this relationship. So I'll say a bit about my research. My research design, here's the topic of that particular project, took place between 2010 and 2013. So the research design was built around two questions. What are the experiences of religious minorities in the country context of Greece, Bulgaria, Romania, and Russia? And second, what are the factors and mechanisms influencing limitations to religious freedom where they're experienced? The country case study selection includes old and new and non-members of the EU. Greece joined in 81, Bulgaria and Romania in 2007, and Russia remains not a member of the EU. And countries with and without an experience of communist regimes. Together, the countries cover a range of levels of religiosity versus secularity, from highly secular in the Bulgarian case and highly religious in the Romanian case. My empirical research was qualitative in nature. It was aimed at understanding the attitudes and practices of the religious majority vis-a-vis religious minorities and the experience of religious minority groups within this context. The fieldwork I will reference consists of in-depth, semi-structured interviews with this group of people, representatives of religious minority groups, representatives of the Orthodox Church, representatives of state organs dealing with religious affairs. Often there was a Ministry of Religious Affairs or something of the sort. And representatives of NGOs dealing with religious freedoms issues, and finally lawyers handling religious freedoms cases. When I say the NGOs and the lawyers, they were also often handling and representing secular and secularist organizations. Besides offering a vibrant picture of current grassroots developments in the domain of religious pluralism, in-depth interviews offered insight into the deeper mentalities, perceptions, and perspectives of people in positions of power. Into their broader objectives, what do they aim to achieve? That's something I want to look at. These perceptives, mentalities, etc., have value independent of the actual facts and realities on the ground. They offer altogether a picture of pluralism, or lack thereof, internalized by the representatives of various stakeholder groups. I'll now draw from that interview material different perspectives on the religion-national identity link as either banal, benign, or pernicious. And I will draw from different voices from each category of interviewees. The examples I offer are only indicative and they're necessarily selective. Obviously, I can't last category here under pernicious is the real effects of the quote-unquote symbolic clauses. My research points to a large gray area between religion and law in terms of interpretation of the precepts and the extent to which supposedly symbolic references in legal and constitutional texts influence, so the extent to which that influence remains truly at the symbolic level. Here I also have multiple quotes. Oh, that's not where I want to go. There. Both from the Russian context. The first is from a Russian parliamentarian who handles religious issues, who says, you know, the very, I'd say, controversial thing, but in practice, practice is practice, and that's another issue. And then the second is from a representative of the Ombudsman's office. And this was something that I think is more obvious in the Russian case than in the others, that, you know, there was the formality of the law and then what's happening in practice is a completely different issue. So many religious minority groups were bothered by such clauses. No, I really didn't do anything there. Is it meant to be this dark? I can't read. I can't see my text, it's tiny as it is. All right, thank you. So I was saying, many religious minority groups were bothered by such clauses. Most conspicuously, their complaints operated at that end of the spectrum of religious freedom where people call for equality and non-discrimination. In other words, why should one religious group be singled out? It's unfair. But less conspicuously, there were instances of direct citations of these clauses as reasons behind limitations experienced by religious minority groups, notably even by some governmental officials. So again, it's easy to see from these examples that the lines between the banal, the benign, and the pernicious are blurred in terms of the effect, but not in terms of the perspectives of the actors in question. And this distinction is key. On to the second question that I posed at the outset, what, if anything, can be done about the problems that arise, if and when they do, around close religion-national identity links. As I mentioned before, scholars are really divided on this issue, and they disagree about the boundaries between the banal, the benign, and the pernicious. Some argue that strict separation of church and state is the solution. Others argue that we need to go further and have absolutely no privileging of one or more religions by the state. And in the context of these kinds of normative disagreements, what can law do to help? Let me just use some illustrations of limitations of the capacity of law to redress such problems. Here I'll broaden my focus away from strictly majority Orthodox cases, both because some of the problems I'm addressing are of a more general nature and applicable well beyond majority Orthodox context, but also because until now my examples have been about freedom of religion, but now I want to turn my attention to examples of freedom from religion. Two particular provocatively titled book publications can serve usefully as a frame for our discussion here. The Tragedy of Religious Freedom by Mark Djerilamy in 2013, and The Impossibility of Religious Freedom by Winfred Fowler Sullivan in 2005. The concerns and discussions of these authors are distinct, but both speak in terms of predicaments. Djerilamy addresses the predicament of legal theory, and Sullivan the predicament of religion. Legal theory, according to Djerilamy, seeks, I'm quoting here, seeks to fix crystalline conceptual categories, but the social practice of religious liberty is resistant to legal theory's self-assured, single-minded drive to evaluate, justify, and adjudge. For her part, Sullivan argues that religion fits, I'm quoting again, fits uneasily into a legal scheme that demands such categories and such expert certainty. Rationalizing religion in the ways proposed by courts and legislatures fails, she says, to capture the nature of people's religious lives at the beginning of the 21st century, or maybe of any century. In short, the predicaments that they describe have a common base
Rights to speak about religion and different disciplines, and to study, to explain religious phenomena, and it is the choice made of the French secular school.